Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 9th of October, 2020. And we have another reasonably positive session in the U.S., a very glass half full market as we talk about here. On slide one, we've kind of crept above that one of the more important Fibonacci retracements when you're talking about when you've seen a sell-off and then it's trying to rally again. So just above that 3430 area. Again, Peter, seeing a little bit of divergence. We're not seeing the impressive new highs anyway in NASDAQ 100 relative to the broader market, but it just seems like the market's in a positive mood for whatever reason.
As we write in our quick take this morning, which you can find on analysis.saxo, it seems like, you know, equity investors are just building up a narrative that either way, what happens, it's good for equities. So if it's a clean sweep from the Democrats, you'll get the potentially the $2.2 trillion fiscal stimulus bill that was passed in the House, which is more than what the Republicans really want to do. But then also you got yesterday Mnuchin and the White House saying that they might want to engage again in fiscal stimulus talks ahead of the election. So either way, the market is celebrating that more stimulus is coming to the U.S. economy. So I think that's what we see reflected. But otherwise, from an equity perspective, we're going into the weekend, and next week we'll start the Q3 earnings season with U.S. financials. And I wrote a preview to that earnings season a couple of days ago, which you again can find on analysis.saxo.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to parse, you know, the degree to which or the odds there are for a decent stimulus deal here. We have the House Democratic Leader Pelosi saying she's not going to do any standalone airline deal, and standalone deals in general, or, you know, she wants this broader deal done. And you get a sense maybe that given Trump's behavior patterns, if he really feels like he is going to go down in this election, that he might take an approach of burning everything down on the way out. I don't know. It feels to me like the market is a little bit complacent here. There's also, yes, maybe we get stimulus under Democrats. We also maybe getting changes to the tax code, an attack on those massive, you know, mega cap companies that have been the chief gainers over the last many years. So I just think there's some longer term questions there. But in FX markets, one of the things that's certainly shaking things up is the Chinese currency, with the yuan opening, the mainland yuan opening again after this long Golden Week holiday. So China's markets are back online again. And I have the offshore tradable CNH here on slide two. But with that gap lower on the mainland version, we're talking about the highest levels for the Chinese currency. Last 1% of range from the 2019 highs for the CNH. So this is an aggressive move. The narrative is that China is keeping a much tighter policy than the rest of the world, and that's driving these gains. But I have a hard time seeing this move aggressively lower if the dollar isn't starting to also attack support in the major pairs. Let's call Eurodollar 118. It needs to get above there. Aussie dollar 72. And do traders really want to do anything aggressive before this U.S. election? It does look like the odds are increasingly shaping up for the known outcome scenario, but I think people are still very cautious there. And Ola, you pointed this one out to me, and I don't think we've had this on the call before, but the five-year. So this is the market sort of pricing of what the five-year rate will be in the U.S. in 5 years' time. We've got it on slide three. It's the black sort of dotted line there, touching those highs for the cycle. And I guess that's a really important component, this kind of measure together with these break-evens for gold.
Absolutely, John. And it's just part of the, as Peter mentioned, the market increasingly focused on a Biden win with the basically taking a huge lead in the polls, and it's helping driving this reflation expectation that we are going to see a Biden presidency will lead to a rising inflation. So the market is continue to price this in, and that's obviously one of the key drivers for gold as well. And we can see this on the slide where we, on the slide, let me just get the slide number here. It's on slide six, where just another take on the inflation expectation. I once again put in the 10-year note break even and real yields. And as you can see, we're starting to see break evens move higher again. And that's it's actually happening at a time where real yields are staying relatively firm or relatively stable here around -1%. So gold is back above 1900. Stimulus hopes, as we talked about, the weaker dollar, the Biden win, all just basically adding to some, giving some support here on the Friday. Looking at the technicals, we've got a trend line coming in from the highs. Trend line hasn't really worked that well recently. We've broken trend lines only to move back down again. But nevertheless, there is some focus on it. It's coming in at 1912 today. Above that, I think probably more important, the October 6 high at 1921. So all in all, so far as the Friday is shaping up, a potential gold supportive day ahead of the weekend.
All right, and just for contrast, on back on that slide 3, I put in the break evens for Europe, and you can see there's not a lot of inspiration there for concern about higher yields, and we have those CPI numbers for Europe coming in very low recently as well, so that's not an issue. Just wanted to briefly note on the economic data yesterday, I found it quite disappointing that the U.S. jobless claims, the weekly initial claims, came in at that 840,000 level again. This almost been unchanged for the third week running and not showing any signs of trending the correct direction. And we have the continuing claims looking supposedly more promising with a drop of about 1 million from an upwardly revised prior figure. But there's some interesting an interesting article, for example, on Wall Street Journal discussing this figure and how some of it could reflect that people are simply running out of their benefits, and discussing other things like the fact that there was a $44 billion of funding that states could access for funding benefits that was for up to 6 weeks, and that was starting on August 1st, and of course that 6 week has expired, so into mid-September. So it really feels like with these reduced benefits out there that this is a big threat to any further momentum without this stimulus coming, unless the economy can grow on its own accord and bring these jobs back into the picture that would drive economic growth. So that's why this stimulus deal is such a big concern. Peter, you've got a couple of interesting charts on both the small caps in Europe and I think a couple of specific stories.
Yeah, if we start with let's start with the specific one. So on slide 4, we mentioned Zalando. They actually yesterday came out with Q3 earnings that again were better than expected. They raised the fiscal year 20 outlook on what I call a consumer goods bonanza. I'll talk more about consumer goods in my equity update today on analysis.saxo, because we've talked about in an internal call that when people are working from home, they're using less money on gasolines, there's less traveling and leisure activities in general across society. So savings rates are, in theory, all else being equal, higher. But people, it seems, if you look at the beat we have got lately from a lot of consumer-oriented companies, also Tesco the other day surprised to the upside, and you had Zalando surprising to the upside. We talked about H&M the other day. There's more and more indications that people are throwing their money at consumer goods. So we'll have a look at that. I think it's quite an interesting story developing there. But yeah, Zalando, it's up a lot since the lows for around 30 euros per share, and it closed at 83 yesterday. So have a look at that one if you're a momentum trader and you want to have exposure to the online/e-commerce fashion retailing industry in Europe. And staying with the theme on Europe, on slide 5, I wrote about it earlier this week. European small caps are actually doing extremely well. And in the past 2 weeks, it's up, I think, more than 12%. It seems to be a lot of bets on European small caps. And this slide here on slide 5, I've took the blue line is Europe's small caps versus the large cap. And the green one is Russell 2000. So the small caps in the US versus the S&P 500, the large caps.
And it's so important to realize these are ratios, not the underlying performance. Of the
so they're ratios, and then they normalized as a percentage increase. So as you can see here, the small cap outperformance, both in Europe and the US, were actually following each other quite well from the early 2001 until around 2014-15. Keep in mind that these are indices, so they're not trading cost adjusted. That always have an impact on small caps. So, but let's leave that aside. What I think is important to note here is that we've talked about this before, John, and you have been banging on this. So 2013 was the absolute peak in the ratio between Russell 2000 and S&P 500, and small caps in the US has been under pressure ever since, and it's been really been accelerating in the past 2 years, where in Europe you're actually seeing small caps continue to outperform. And I think the question I'm asking here is whether this massive monopoly market power that we're seeing in US markets is not something we have here in Europe.
it's a unique phenomenon.
Yeah. I just think this is an interesting perspective, and I just want to highlight the small caps if you are a momentum trader, because they're really, really working well these days.
All right. Now, we've talked a lot this week and recently about the grain market, food price risk out there with the, especially yesterday, we covered this a lot. What's the latest here? We saw a pretty volatile day in wheat yesterday, Ole.
Yeah, just before we talk about slide 7, we had the United Nations Food Price Index out yesterday for September, and it did obviously not. It did show another increase to a new 7-month high, rose 2.2% in the month. And again, the basket which tracks, I think, 95 food commodities around the world was primarily impacted by a rise in oil and cereals, which obviously are the grain sector. And I'd highlighted today, as I said, on slide 7, the wheat contract. Just put in a monthly chart just for perspective. We basically hit the highest level since 2015 this week. We zoomed above $6 only to run into some profit taking late in the session yesterday. Probably some profit taking ahead of today's WASDE report, where there will be focus on the expected ending stocks for at the end of the 2020-21 season. And as the small inserts are showing, the market expectations right now are for all of the major crops to see a reduction in ending stocks compared to the data for September. Something like corn, a 15% reduction in the US and a 20% reduction in soy ending stocks in the US. But generally, the world ending stocks are also projected to be lower. So obviously, these numbers need to be confirmed this afternoon. Otherwise, we could potentially see some profit taking. But overall, weather concerns in the U.S., in South America, and now also recently in Russia and Ukraine is having a positive impact on prices.
That in that small table, that says corn ending stocks, and then below it says corn world ending stocks. I guess the top number is the U.S. That's for the U.S., and then the world is the rest of the world, ex-U.S.?
It's total, but obviously the U.S., they love to do things differently, so they're measuring their in millions of bushels.
Ah, bushels versus tons.
Yeah, where the rest of the world is
it's doing important that. To realize the units. Exactly. I did not see the units on the far right.
Whereas the rest of the world is using a more understandable million tons, but... that's just the US.
You have always been special in the US.
Don't get me started. I've had this conversation with my wife about why we like imperial units still in the US. But let's get on to the calendar. Not a whole lot today. The Canadian jobs data is quite interesting as well. I should note yesterday, the Bank of Canada Governor Macklem actually bringing up the notion that negative interest rates are a policy tool if needed, even if they're not actively in discussions to consider negative rates. And yet the Canadian dollar was considerably stronger. Actually, dollar Canada heading below an interesting 132.50 level. Presumably the strong oil rally yesterday on these storm concerns in the Gulf are a key thing there, driving the Canadian outperformance. But a bit surprised at the lack of the market taking note of that mention of negative rates. But let's see the jobs data today from Canada for further input there. And then we have the stuff for next week up on the calendar on slide 8 if you're interested. I think the two key things I would pull out for next week, or three things really, the US CPI, we're going to be getting very touchy around these CPI releases if they continue to go higher, or even if they don't, because the market is really aggressively priced in what the future shape of inflation will be. The question is how sensitive we are in the near term here until we get into next year. And then we have the EU summit as well, given that with extra interest given the Brexit deadline self-imposed by the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, and whether they will collapse talks if they haven't been able to agree in principle before then. So that starts on Thursday, ends on Friday. And then also on Friday, we have the US September retail sales. Again, Peter's point on people spending on online and other retail bits and pieces rather than spending in other areas of the economy because of lockdowns could still be driving strong sales. But given all these benefits beginning to run out, we wonder if some of the momentum could be coming out there. So we'll be tuning into that next week. We'll be also putting out a special edition podcast covering our Q4 outlook. So stay tuned for that. We'll have that ready for you hopefully ahead of the weekend, and you can have a listen to that as well. For now, stay safe out there. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with a Saxo Market Call.